U.S. commanders this past week condemned the abuse of Iraqis held prisoner by the American military. Photographs first shown on the CBS News program 60 Minutes 2 depicted scenes of humiliation and torture at the Abu Ghraib prison. The images became public almost exactly a year after President Bush declared an end to major combat in Iraq, and at a time when soldiers and Marines still confront a persistent insurgency on many fronts around Iraq. This weekend, the U.S. command said four American soldiers died in separate attacks. The death toll among American forces in the past year, approximately 430 in combat, far exceeds the 109 soldiers and Marines killed in the initial invasion of Iraq. The death toll among Iraqis is unknown, but the website iraqbodycount.net today places the figure at between 8,979 and 10,833. Michael O'Hanlon is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He has joined us throughout the war in Iraq. He's in the studio. Welcome back, Mike.
Thanks, Leanne.
It's been a year, as I said, since President Bush dramatically flew onto the deck of the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln and declared that major combat had ended. What's your take on the situation now?
Well, clearly the war continues, and that banner, mission accomplished, was clearly one that no one in their right mind would put up there again. And I think the president protests too much to argue that we really did have a meaningful accomplishment by that date. Certainly getting rid of Saddam was a major first step, getting rid of his regime anyway. But we've seen that the war has continued, and in fact, in this last month, it's been more intense in terms of American casualties than ever. So obviously the war goes on, and in fact, now it's becoming a little broader conflict with more anti-Americanism fueling the insurgency, not just former Baathists.
Mike, the president led the United States into this war with contentions that Saddam Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction, none have been found, that the Iraqi people would welcome American troops as liberators. That sentiment was widespread initially, but it's faded into an inactive insurgency, and that the overthrow of Saddam Hussein would help bring democracy not only to Iraq, but to much of the rest of the Arab world. How do those contentions measure up right now?
Well, most of those, of course, don't measure up very well. But I do think we have to give the president due for getting rid of Saddam Hussein, who was one of the great genocidal dictators of the late 20th century, one of the worst people, responsible for the deaths of more than a million individuals. Now, it's true his worst killing was largely in the past, and therefore one can debate whether on humanitarian grounds the overthrow was worthwhile, whether the carnage that's ensued justifies the carnage we may have prevented. But on balance, you do have to remember this was one of the world's most lethal dictators to his own people and neighbors, and there's no telling what he might have done someday had he ever gotten that nuclear weapon. We know he was a long ways from it. The Bush administration overstated how close he was to it, but the worry was still real and still worth facing at some level.
Since the insurgency has been so violent, the Pentagon has extended the tours of duty of tens of thousands of troops, and the U.S. military is stretched thin. How much longer can it maintain this pace?
The short answer is no one knows, and that's why General Schoomaker, the head of the Army, and Mr. Rumsfeld are saying, let's not go to a bigger military just yet. Let's wait and see. I think that attitude, frankly, is very ill-advised, because once you learn you've got a big problem, it's too late to fix it. The point is, once you learn you've got a problem, it's because people are no longer joining or staying in, at which point how do you convince even more people to stay in to build a larger army? So this is a sort of situation where you want to take action early, preempt the problem. If we have a doctrine of preemption, this is a good case to apply it. Let's make the army bigger now before we have a huge personnel problem, before we have to start sending units back to Iraq for the third and fourth time. We're already sending them back now for the second time.
The Bush administration still insists that some limited sovereignty will be handed over to the Iraqis at the end of June. Does it look realistic to you at this point?
I think it's not only realistic, but necessary, because, again, anti-Americanism is becoming a big part of the problem. We are no longer just facing Baathists, former Saddam loyalists, and jihadists from abroad. We are facing more and more angry, unemployed, anti-American Iraqis on the street joining in the insurrection. And they want their country back. Even if it's not realistic for them to have all their country back right away, we have to at least make the beginning. So I think a technocratic government that essentially is a caretaker for the next 6 or 7 months, hopefully people who can't run for office and therefore a little less politically contentious, I think it's the right move. I think there's a very good chance that Mr. Brahimi will be able to pull off this sort of government in the next few weeks, and we can pull this off.
Very briefly, do you think it might be realistic to start withdrawing some American forces now?
No. I think that American forces are going to have to stay at the current level, maybe even slightly larger, until we really establish security. It's going to take probably at least 6 to 12 months before we can begin a drawdown, and it's going to take the whole decade to get American forces home.
Michael O'Hanlon is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington. Mike, as always, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Leanne.